My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Thursday, May 13th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
So the industry is small, but it has large potential, and we encourage everybody to, at the very least, to eat seaweed, enjoy the nutritional benefits and the taste benefits, and ultimately help us deliver a sector that's good for the planet.
We learn more about the up-and-coming industry that is seaweed. First, we'll learn about why the industry is so important when it comes to climate change and just what seaweed is actually good for. Then, we'll speak to a local company that is already deeply invested. Today's episode of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by University of Victoria School of Nursing. Remember that this week is National Nursing Week, so thank a nurse in your life today. Although it spends almost all of its life under the ocean surface, seaweed and the burgeoning industry that is springing up around it is having its day in the sun. There is a global push to ramp up the seaweed industry, and those in favor cite its numerous environmental benefits. Seaweed crops are particularly powerful when it comes to fighting climate change, and can be cultivated alongside shellfish and finfish farms to mitigate their environmental impacts. It can be used as food for humans and animals, but some types of seaweed can also be substitutes for petroleum in the creation of both biofuel and bioplastics. In 2018, the United Nations Global Compact published a seaweed manifesto, and on Vancouver Island, businesses and communities are starting to take note. Co-producer Emily Vance spoke with two people who are active in Vancouver Island's seaweed industry. Emily, who are we going to hear from first?
Jackie, first up, I spoke with Louis Drouel. He is a longtime marine biologist and a kelp cultivator in Bamfield. He was actually the first commercial kelp grower in all of North America back in the 1980s. His company is called Canadian Kelp Resources. And today on the show, he tells us about what drew him to the industry back when he started and how he's seen it pick up speed over the last couple of years.
Louis, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay, so you've been involved in the seaweed industry for quite some time. Can you tell me when and why you got involved?
Well, I started off as an academic. I taught marine botany at Simon Fraser. And during the course of my studies, I was, of course, involved with kelp. And the provincial government decided they wanted to determine whether or not it's conceivable you could farm kelp in British Columbia. So around 1978, they asked me to head up a small team to explore this possibility. And so for the next 5 years, we did this, and we were successful. We were able to adopt Asian and other farming techniques to the British Columbia situation. At the end of the 5 years, one of my technicians, Catherine Lloyd, went out and started the first commercial farm, kelp farm, in outside of Asia, and she operated it here in Bamfield for about 10 years. And since then, there's been a kind of a dribble of kelp farms. I call them boutique farms, people doing a little bit here and a little bit there, nothing really large. And then after a couple of decades of this, we came to the era of Cascadia seaweed, which is now, and the era of the big farm. And so that's where we find ourselves today.
And your company, Canadian Kelp Resources, does a number of things. Can you walk me through what you do?
Yeah, sure. Well, we have a line of edible kelp products that we market. We produce kelp seed for kelp farmers. We advise people on how to kelp farm. We do experimental work on introducing new species for kelp farming, new ways of using kelp farming techniques to go into areas where the kelp beds are not, I'm not talking about bull kelp and the giant kelp, where these beds are diminishing for reasons we don't understand, but definitely related to climate change. And hopefully we can reseed them with these new techniques. So we do a variety of things like that. And I had to throw in that I'm also a novelist and the editor of the local paper. And I got some great grandkids. So it's a good life.
That is a good life. That sounds wonderful. And this is not just happening on Vancouver Island. There's a bit of a global push happening towards seaweed. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So the the big punch right now is happening in the southern hemisphere. So we're talking about Australia, Tasmania area, off of the coast of South Africa, and a lot of those little Antarctic islands. These areas have very rich nutrient waters, and the what's unique is that they're rich year-round. We have rich waters here, but there's a seasonality to it. So our plants do very well for a while, and then they don't do so well. But down in those climes, they do well all the time. So the idea is to build large farms, which may actually impact the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Most recently, a group out of Namibia, just north of South Africa, are talking about putting in a $60 million farm, or series of farms, as more or less a model to see if we could really have large farms. And people were talking about five times the surface area of Australia. So this is pretty, pretty big business, and I think it's an engineering nightmare. Anyhow, that's where it is now, and that's a lot of the push is to counter climate change. Elsewhere, they're farming kelp, like in Europe, and they're also countering climate change, but their attitude's slightly different. They could use the kelp as a biofuel. They can use it as a source of material to make biodegradable plastics, which otherwise would be using petroleum products, and also fertilizers, which require petroleum products. So by not so much by cleaning up the atmosphere, but by not allowing the use of so much petroleum, one is able to counter the environmental change. So it's all heading towards the same thing, hopefully a nice clean planet.
Mm-hmm. How instrumental do you think seaweed and kelp farming can be in working to reduce the impacts of climate change?
I think it would be definitely a significant player. There's not going to be any one solution to how we handle this. I mean, just taking the gasoline-burning vehicles off the road would make a phenomenal difference, not to mention the airplanes. But that alone probably wouldn't do it either now. I mean, we're so far along in putting up carbon in the air. But everything, we just have to add up with a lot of other successful enterprises. That's all. I don't think there is an answer. So.
Well, Louis, thank you so much for taking the time to explain this all. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Emily, you also spoke with another guest for this episode. Who's that?
Yes. So I spoke with Bill Collins of the Sydney-based company Cascadia Seaweed, who Louis mentioned in his interview. Bill went a bit more in depth about the ways that seaweed has the potential to fight the impacts of climate change. And he told me about what Cascadia is working on accomplishing and his overall vision for the aquaculture industry on Vancouver Island.
Before we get to that, we will take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by the University of Victoria School of Nursing. Last year, the University of Victoria's School of Nursing made a commitment toward inclusion of Indigenous peoples and reconciliation in step with the calls to action of Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Learn more about how three nursing faculty members are realizing this promise by helping prepare nursing students for future careers at tinyurl.com/uvicnursing. And don't forget that this week is National Nursing Week. So thank a nurse in your life today.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I appreciate it.
You're more than welcome.
Okay, so I'm going to start pretty broadly. What is Cascadia Seaweed and what do you do?
We're a seaweed cultivator. So we have a team of 20 people that off Vancouver Island and soon to be other parts of British Columbia coast, we cultivate seaweed. So that means that we create seed in a nursery from natural sourced stock, which there are 630 species growing off our coast here. We cultivate the seaweed. We create seedlings from it. We plant those out in farms in the coastal zones of British Columbia. And the seaweed grows like a weed. It can be up to a meter and a half long after 4 months of being in the water. And then we go out in a boat, we haul the rope in, cut the seaweed off into fish totes and bring it to processing plants to be made into highly nutritious food. The big difference is we're not harvesters in that we don't extract natural biomass. We create our own biomass. And in so doing, we have a lot of other benefits to the environment, which I can talk about when you wish.
Mm-hmm. Would love to hear about those. But I guess, first of all, how and why did you get started?
Well, I was working on a project with Vancouver Island Economic Alliance. And the goal of this organization is to build out business on Vancouver Island. One of the projects we had was to identify new business sectors to which Vancouver Island had a global advantage. So those sectors would include value add for wood, for example, or clean tech in the CRD area. There's a critical mass of engineering capability that really could be put to use for technologies that are clean and sustaining. And we also looked at cultural tourism, because a lot of First Nations along our coast have incredible histories, and they would like to share their history, and folks would like to hear that. So we believed that it would be represent another incredible business opportunity. At the end of the day, aquaculture, and in particular seaweed, was where we landed as part of the four. So it was a generic study. Give us four great business cases, which we did. The seaweed business case was so compelling, I said, somebody has to do this. It might as well be me. And working with a couple of colleagues who urged, once they saw the idea, urged the formation of Cascadia Seaweed. So between the three founders, we all agreed it was a good idea. And we all had the energy to put into it, and solicited other folks to share the dream. So that's how seaweed, that's how Cascadia Seaweed was founded. I will say, however, that as part of the study for businesses that have a sort of natural competitive advantage in the globe, when you look at aquaculture in general, it caused us a little delay in considering it. Because if you're an investor from, say, South Korea, and you said, well, where is Vancouver Island and why should I be interested in aquaculture? If you just did a straight search on aquaculture in British Columbia, you would see a very engaging debate about the benefits or the destructive aspects of finfish farming. And so that would not appeal to investors that didn't know anything about Vancouver Island. But when you take one layer of the onion back, what you see is aquaculture represents three relatively distinct industries: finfish aquaculture, shellfish aquaculture, and the new kid on the block, seaweed aquaculture. And between the three of them, they constitute a source of protein that's going to be important for feeding the world in the future, if we can do it sustainably. And growing seaweed is a great model for a sustainable new industry that feeds the planet. So from a business opportunity perspective, if you looked at seaweed as a food, you'll find folks like the World Bank saying by 2035, 10% of the food biomass on Earth should come from sea greens, because we've really not tapped into that as a high protein source of food, and it's really important. Those were compelling reasons and why we took up the challenge of delivering this new business into this new sector.
Mm-hmm. You touched on several things I'd like to go into, but one of them I think is what you just mentioned, the global shift towards seaweed. Can you explain why that's happening and how Vancouver Island and Cascadia fits into that puzzle?
Yes. So I think folks have asked, why, if this is such a good idea, why hasn't it been done before? Because seaweed has been cultivated on the island here for more than four decades. Well, the answer is that it's the stars and the moon needed more closely to be aligned, shall I say. What came together was a couple of things. First of all, massive investment in animal alternative food, plant-based protein. And as you know, Beyond Meat and Impossible Burgers and any number of other vegan food sources that folks are wanting to live a better lifestyle and they want us to use to eat less meat. And so that's just a normal progression as we all look at optimal health conditions. So plant-based food, the big investment in there. And secondly, the attention to climate in everything that we do. There hasn't been an election in the democratic world in at least a decade or two that hasn't had climate action as part of its mandate. So it's in people's minds front and center. We have to generate sustainable industries, and not just sustainable industries. We need to be climate positive. So the more we can do this, the better. So between climate action and between health and wellness through plant-like protein, the stars and the moon align, and seaweed being an algae, it's not a plant, but the point is it comes from way lower down in the food chain from the ocean. It's not a bioaccumulator. And therefore to extract the nutrition from the seawater and embed it in seaweed improves coastal ocean health. And that's really important. So if you can feed people while performing climate positive industry, you've hit two really important points. And that's really why we're doing seaweed and why we're doing it now.
Mm-hmm. Can you go into some of the climate benefits of seaweed?
Yeah. So the one that's of most notable today is the fact that as seaweed grows, it gets its nutrition from the seawater and the nutrients in the seawater, and of course some sun energy, providing it delivers some nutrition from the sun. But as it grows, it essentially takes up carbon. Now, if maybe one way to think about it is, in the grand scheme of things, the goal of Cascadia and others is to decarbonize the atmosphere and recarbonize the biosphere. So seaweed as a sink for carbon dioxide, it absorbs about 20 times more carbon dioxide than a terrestrial plant. So we do have an ability that takes carbon into the structure of the seaweed. There's a large move afoot to quantify how much carbon can be extracted out of the atmosphere through the ocean into seaweed. So that as that work is being done, you also have the ancillary work, which is basically blue carbon. Many notable science bodies recognize the role of mangroves and eelgrasses or seagrass in the extraction of CO2 in that process, and the sequestration of CO2, which is the reason that we have to protect eelgrass and we have to protect mangrove. Seaweed is another Lego block in that pillar of blue carbon. And by quantifying it, we hope that that folks will recognize that as important as it is in, say, temperate climates for mangroves, algae and macroalgae in the form of seaweed is important to protect and increase the biodiversity in our coastal zones in more temperate climates. Tropical climates for mangroves and temperate climates for seaweed. So we have to do this. Now, it's not a panacea because seaweed is 90% water. But it does grow very fast. It's one of the fastest growing things on Earth. The question is, what becomes permanent sequestration? And we're working to quantify that. I can tell you that if you had a seaweed farm in a water depth deeper than 1,000 meters and you grew seaweed as fast as you could and allowed it to sink into say deeper than a kilometer of water or so, you'd likely permanent sequester that. Wow. For coastal seaweed in general, we're harvesting as well. But of course, a large portion of the seaweed sloughs off through the growth cycle. So you are contributing to coastal sedimentation and the coastal temporary sink of carbon as seaweed falls off and falls to the sediment. Now, it takes a long time to get that sediment into the deep ocean. And at the same time, it can be repurposed. There are other organisms in the sediment eating the seaweed. So as I said, it's not necessarily from a ocean carbon disposal. Coastal seaweed cultivation doesn't deliver everything you need. However, by learning to grow seaweed on the coast, we can use technology to scale up. And that's when it becomes a really important factor in ocean carbon disposal. Now, there's another element to it. While it grows, it has filters the water in such a way that it extracts excess nitrogen. So it can be used for conservation and for remediation purposes if you're growing it in an area that has high land runoff using fertilizers. Plus, we also know it moderates ocean acidification in areas that it does grow. Not the least of which is important is it provides some habitat for organisms that are living in the coastal zone and say in water depths, say less than 30 or 40 meters. So it is refugia, which is really important for some things like salmon. And we hope to be quantifying just how important seaweed cultivation can be in terms of salmon wild stock restoration. That's an ongoing area of research for us, and we really need to quantify it. But back to the carbon perspective, and here's, I guess, the other GHG opportunity that seaweed presents. So let's say, number one, while you're growing seaweed, you're sequestering a certain amount of carbon. If you harvest that seaweed and it then gets fed to cows, for example, certain species of seaweed will reduce or eliminate to a large extent the methane emissions that come from cow burps. Mm-hmm. And that represents about 4.8 to 5% of global GHGs. So when you feed a seaweed to cow in very small amounts, like less than a couple of percent, it acts in the cow to reduce or eliminate the organisms that feed in the rumen of the cow and that produce the methane. Now, methane is 28 times more powerful than CO2 as a GHG, so it is the low-hanging fruit. It is possible to significantly reduce that. If you could do it on a global scale, which means a lot of seaweed, but if you can do it on a global scale, you have an opportunity very quickly to take 5% of GHGs down, which is a really important number. Now, for seaweed to grow at that kind of scale, it's massive, but we're limited by the will of governments and industry to scale up and the money that it might take to scale up. So there's no impediments from a technical perspective to do this. It's the scale up and the business operations and to keep the economics flowing. That's going to be really important. There mm-hmm. is, however, a third component of agri-feeds, which is important from a GHG perspective. The collateral benefit when you feed seaweed to cows is it improves certain seaweeds to cows. It improves the feed conversion ratio. So it's quite probable that when you use a supplement of seaweed, you can improve the feed conversion ratio, which is the ratio of the amount of feed you give a cow to its weight, for example, or as a dairy cow to the milk volume. So if you can feed a cow 30% less or 20% less, it means you use 20% less arable land to grow silage and water to support that, which has a GHG benefit as well. So you get the triple bottom line. If you can make it work, and if you can make the economics work so that a farmer doesn't mind feeding their cow seaweed supplement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it sounds like there are so many benefits and many potentials. And as I understand, you're kind of at the beginning of the journey. Cascadia is almost 2 years old. What kinds of projects do you have in the works right now?
Yeah, so our main goal is to focus everyone's activity at scaling up because we need to grow more seaweed. And we need to make sure that the economics work. We have to be profitable, because if we can be profitable, our partners, which are coastal First Nations of British Columbia, they will gain value from the seaweed partnership with Cascadia. So there's a ton of potential provided we can be profitable. So right now, goal number one is to grow as much seaweed as we possibly can. And the biggest challenge is one of regulations. Seaweed is considered a vegetable by CFIA, for example. So in terms of licensing for growth, do we treat it the same as if we are raising an animal in the ocean? I think not. So governments and the regulatory side need to innovate to allow seaweed cultivation to happen at a rapid pace. This is of course, important. The other things that, so assuming we can grow as much as we can, we know the seaweed as a food market is growing by between 8 and 14% per year. It has done for a decade and likely will continue for another decade. We have to feed 10 billion people before too long. And as the World Bank pointed out, it's important that ocean greens are a part of that answer. It's not just seaweed for food. It's seaweed for agri-feeds, as I mentioned. And that's not just cows. It could be other livestock as well. Then you have the human health aspect. So we have about 630 species, as I mentioned, off our coast. Less than a handful globally have ever been cultivated. Less than perhaps 2 to 3 to 4 dozen of that 630 have ever been sampled for bioactive components. And we know in the seaweeds that we are able to cultivate, we know significant amounts of nutraceutical properties and pharmaceutical properties can be developed. New drugs can be found. This is a world of bioprospecting as much as it is anything else. So we've yet to even scratch the surface on the value of seaweed as a nutraceutical and a pharmaceutical. Then you have other components of the seaweed. Of some species is really laden with sodium alginate. Sodium alginate as an input to, for example, plastic making is a very strong contender to transition from a hydrocarbon-based plastic to an organic or bioplastic. These are all doable. They're done at a small scale. Is it possible to scale up and can you make the economics work? That's really something that we'll have to, the future will tell us. If we're able to get the right levels of support and the right levels of investment, we believe it will be a technical solution to make it more efficient. Again, it comes back to how much seaweed we can grow. And I'll put one more stick in the plan here, and that is growing seaweed on land. The largest producer of seaweed in North America is a company from the East Coast of Canada that grows seaweed in tanks on land to support a market in Japan. So it is possible for us to grow species that may be high protein species or niche market that provides some value to someone. Maybe it's a nutraceutical or a pharmaceutical that doesn't need 100,000 tons a year. Maybe it needs tens of tons or hundreds of tons that can be efficiently grown on land. Then the economics work for that. We just need to develop the right cultivars and strains to do this effectively when we're taking them out of the water, the ocean, and into a tank-based facility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. It sounds like there's so much there. Tell me about Seaweed Days, the first international Seaweed Days that's starting on Monday.
Yeah. Well, our team of marketing experts who are most excellent, enthusiastic folks that just love to tell the story of seaweed decided that it was important that we continue on this road, on the journey, the seaweed journey. One of the things perhaps lacking was an ability for a vast, wide public knowledge of seaweed and all its benefits, and in particular, the food brand. So the question came up, well, how do we deliver that? How do we do more of a massive outreach? And, you know, social media is wonderful, but there are festivals every day, and particularly the new virtual world, folks are getting used to being able to do it online, which makes the individual way more accessible to what the globe has to offer without having to get on an airplane and physically go there. So we decided we would do Seaweed Days as a way. Originally, the thought was that we would do it quite locally and say provide chefs with the product that they could in turn cook or bake with seaweed or have fresh seaweed salads. And the local population could go into these restaurants and taste and just sense the wonder of this new nutritious food has to offer. So now, of course, we're in COVID still, and it's really important to do things virtually. So the moment the virtual arena opened up to us, so too could the broader reach. And we just had such an overwhelming support from our sponsors and from other folks interested in telling their seaweed story around the globe that we thought it would be an excellent platform. So we jumped in with both feet into the water. And next week is the Seaweed Festival. And we've been contacted by other folks that have, you know, more traditional seaweed festival on the ground. It will be a global event. We will partner with other folks in the globe because One thing that's really unique that we've discovered about the seaweed industry is that it's so collaborative, because the massive job that we have to do as industry, as regulators, as sector developers, as sector development people, we have a massive job to provide seaweed to the folks that are going to want to eat it and work with it and use it as an industrial tool in our organic biosphere of tools. It will continue to grow. And that's why we believe, like, we're almost sold out. I think we've had to add the free registration, which you can find at seaweeddays.com. We've had to add spaces in our virtual free events because the response has been excellent. So your listeners should join and share in a global view. We'll have folks from all over the world listening to or watching chefs virtually prepare meals. So it's a wonderful event. And it will just really serve to satisfy the smallest of the insatiable appetite that we see as seaweed going forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you hope that the future of the seaweed industry on Vancouver Island looks like?
If in our wildest dreams, we and our partners would have farms up and down the island, which would allow farmers to go back to their hometowns, go back to their home villages, and work in climate positive, meaningful jobs where they are creating food, growing food for people to eat. And they do it from their own home and their own communities or where they traditionally have lived. If we could put people back into their and allow them to work, we believe everyone would be happier. We would see coastal revitalization because traditionally that's where folks lived and worked. In our wildest of dreams, the industry gets big, and the First Nations in particular, our partners, become wonderfully versed in how to grow seaweed, how to market seaweed, and eventually, if it could be a First Nations-led industry as a model for the world, in our wildest dreams, that's what it would look like into the future.
It sounds like there's quite a lot of potential there with everything that you mentioned. Is there anything else you think listeners should know in the context of this interview?
It sounds great. There's a lot of more work on the ground to be done. And it demands thinking from all quarters. So the industry is small, but it has large potential. And we encourage everybody to, at the very least, as soon as the North American product stream is ready for seaweed, to eat seaweed, enjoy the nutritional benefits and the taste benefits, and ultimately help us deliver a sector that's good for the planet and it's good for the people living in the coastal zones of British Columbia and out east and eventually in the north. So join in the fun of seaweed.
That's great. Oh, I should ask, what's your favorite way to eat seaweed?
Fresh right out of the water. It's not slimy. It's not salty. And I can tell you, it tastes beautifully green.
I'm pretty partial to seaweed myself. Bill, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Ask me back anytime.
Do you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of almost 50,000? Email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thank you so much for spending some of your Thursday with us today. If you enjoy the podcast, please feel free to share so all your friends can find it as well, and rate, review, and subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamports. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.